Here via phone.
Christensen?
Yes, present.
German?
Here.
Now?
Here.
And Beanstalk, Goodman, and Lout are absent.
Thank you, Sherry. Agenda item number 2, call of the public. Brian, you want to take this?
Yes, well, this is the time for the call to the public. If anybody either attending virtually or in person wish just to speak to the committee, they'll give opportunity later on certain agenda items to speak as well. But if you wanted to address the committee now, would be the time to do so. Additionally, the screen that you see right in front of you is a welcome. If you haven't already done so and you wish to speak and you're not a member of the committee, go ahead and sign in on the sign-in sheet so that we can take down that display here shortly. So at this time, I'll turn it over to Dr. Hero. And if anybody wishes to make a statement at the call to the public, please stand up and introduce yourself.
Or if you're virtual, just you can raise your hand. Did anybody sign in, Christian?
We have 2 people who have signed in, but they'll only speak if necessary.
Okay. Why don't we just move forward?
Yep, so no call to the public.
So we'll move to agenda item number 3, review, discussion, and possible action on committee meeting minutes. Would any committee member like to make a motion regarding the open session minutes from April 20th, 2021?
I'll move to approve.
Hero will second. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None opposed.
Aye.
Aye.
A few more. 4. agenda item number 4, current statutes and or rules regarding anesthesia and sedation. In the past, we've kind of jumped around and come back to this. I think we should just start right here. I know there's been some work done, particularly regarding the permitting process language. So, Brian, can we make a note that 241, Dr. Brady's here? Morning, Dr. Brady.
Morning, Dr. Brady. Thank you. Sorry, Brian.
No problem. So we'll open it up to the committee for anyone that wants to speak. I know some committee members have been working on certain language, if you guys want to fill us in.
I can take it. This is Bugatti. So at the last meeting, we spent a lot of time discussing the rules, especially around the 1304 permit. Some of the main items that we're talking about was adding, you know, additional safety, perhaps additional oversight by the board to know what offices are having anesthesia services in them. We also talked about improving access. So what I did was worked with several other members and took the things that we discussed in the meeting and then tried to apply it to the current rules. I will just say on this, in the documents for the meeting, there's one piece that shows my recommended language changes. Those were the language changes that we actually approved back in September. This new version really takes what we discussed at the last meeting as a committee and tried to put that down on paper. It incorporates some of the items that were in the previous version, but not all of them, so it's a little bit different. I don't know, you know, there is, as we discussed among individuals, there's a lot of red in there. A lot of it is removing language, a lot of it is referencing new sections as appropriate. So there's quite a few changes that it looks like, oh, wow, there's a whole lot of red in here, but the number of changes really, it's not hugely significant. The big changes that come with this is, and again, this comes from our last meeting, what the consensus of the committee was that every office that brings in an outside anesthesia provider would be required to get a permit, whether it's a 1301 through 1304, because that would mean more dentists applying for permits, and it would also mean that because there'd be more dentists applying for permits, and also concerned by the committee that the on-site evaluation, the dentist isn't required to have any of that equipment on site. So they bring in an outside group that's present for the inspection, but there's nothing that requires them to continue that group. So rather than having an on-site inspection, we have an affidavit that all of the equipment would be there. And then it also brings in something that Dr. Brady brought up, which was a component of what we adapted back in September, but to have a certification for non-dentists so that if a dentist wants to bring in a non-dentist, that dentist would have to be certified from the board by signing an affidavit that when they administer anesthesia or sedation in a dental office, that they'll have the appropriate equipment, monitors, emergency medication, et cetera. So I'm not sure what's the best way, if we want to go through it or,
Ollie, where is it at? Where is it? I have the one that you did back in September. Where's the current? Do you have a page?
Let's see if it's
194.
194.
Thank you.
While we're scrolling, this is Brady. I just want to make a quick comment. I just want to say thank you, Ali, for kind of those discussions that we had. I think one of the critical points that seems to be identified is that Ali brought it to my attention is even though a 1304 permit, a CRNA can have that done in an office, the next day could be a different CRNA that's in there. And the problem that I see is if there's a bad provider, regardless what educational program, then the board has to have some ability to stop that bad provider from going to office B or C if there is an issue in office A. So I'm cautiously optimistic that the nursing board will be on the same page with that. Not seems like we're like in a conundrum. So
This is Bagai. The question as we talked about before is like, it could be said that the 1304 permit period is somehow in a way regulating non-dentists, right? And so then it could be said that having this 1305 certification that's in this language, that is somehow regulating non-dentists. And I can't speak for the nursing board. I can say that I ran this language by the CRNA Professional Association and they signed off on it. In my mind, this certification really is more like, in order to give anesthesia, you need ACLS. It doesn't mean that the American Heart Association is regulating healthcare providers. They're just providing a certification that we need in order to work. So, I can't speak for what the Board of Nursing will say. Can speak that the Professional CRNA Association has said they're comfortable with this language.
That's good to know. Thank you. This is Brady again. Just one last question, I guess, for you. And you can, I'm sure you're going to work this in with whatever you're talking about, but on the 1304 attestation would be for like non-dentists kind of certifying that, hey, they didn't just lose hospital privileges or they didn't just, decided one day that they wanted to treat pediatric patients and all that. Did you have an opportunity to look at the Mississippi application? And do you feel that that was applicable, or were there any red flags in that with regards to your profession?
I did look at it. When you and I discussed it, and I don't understand what the beef was with it.
Right.
I can't speak to the leadership at the time that made that an issue, but I didn't see any big, huge red flags. Trying to go and adopt it very similarly into ours, I think would have been like a full rewrite, which I think we're trying to avoid a little bit,
right.
But trying to incorporate some of the same principles.
This is German. I did have a question, since you brought that up, Dr. Brady, about the Mississippi regulation. So for class one, from what I understood anyway, from class one providers, if an anesthesiologist, a non-dentist, a CRNA or a physician anesthesiologist per these regulations, wanted to provide general anesthesia, they had to do so with a dentist who holds a class one provider permit. Is that correct?
That is correct to the point of only for CRNAs right now in Mississippi, that they had their level of permit has to be the level that commensurates with the providing dentist.
So according to if this were to apply, then Ali could not provide general anesthesia at a pediatric dentist's office.
That was the point that I was trying to avoid.
Yeah.
Was that because of the 1305, it gives the board ability to say, we have to put a pause on this provider and know what offices that they're going to, rather than having to do it with the language that Mississippi holds.
I got you. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. That way it gives them, and it's back up a little bit historically why this is such a big point to me, is that in Mississippi, we were on the same page with the CRNAs for an entire year before it went to the OLRC. And at that point, they said, no, we're not going to allow this. And then that's when it went to this language. And they say, well, if you can't allow us to permit you or to certify you, have a certificate in any manner, the only way the dentist can, that they can ensure safety within the dental practice is to tag it at the same level.
I got you. And I think from what we talked about in Mississippi originally, you were trying to do similar to what this language is that I sent in for this, right? Where there was a certification, and then all of a sudden somebody lit a trash can fire.
There was a change of guard. Yeah, there was the president of that society at the time was on board for the year, but then there was a change of guard, a change of opinion.
Yeah, I don't foresee that happening in Arizona based on, I know who the next two change of guards are to lead the association. They all voted yes.
Okay.
So I don't see what happening in Mississippi becoming an issue here.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. How, this is Shiro. Ollie, were you able to look at Dr. German and Dr. Snell's original changes and how that affects what you had added in?
Dr. German, it's been a while since I read it with Lee.
So myself, I might even want to go back and redo. We had talked about redoing the 1301 and I put language in there for that, and that's not the case.
Yeah, because I remember in yours, Dr. Snell, there was a lot of changes to the class 1, 2, 3, 4.
Right.
And then when I presented my original language, I used that language, and then it confused everybody.
Right.
Dr. German's, I think, more relates to having a separate anesthesia provider when there's a pediatric patient. I think that their language could get incorporated into it. I didn't incorporate it. I guess there was enough red in what I put together already that I didn't, add in their stuff, I guess. And I know at least with Dr. German's language, there's not consensus amongst them.
We had, this is German talking, I thought we had agreed a few months back, and maybe Dr. Blazek can remind me, but I had consented to actually recall that section specifically about mandating one of the four extra providers there to provide anesthesia, the physician, the CRNA, another oral surgeon, or a dental anesthesiologist when a child under 8 was being cared for. With the thought process that this needed more debate and more data to discuss. I did make some changes, or there's some red lines about how to define different levels of sedation. I think that we had all agreed on based on different societal definitions. But those were small. So as far as that one segment goes, Dr. Blazek, do you recall, I think we had agreed to
to withdraw it until we had further discussion is exactly what, what we talked about. Yeah. And I think certainly I work with Ollie and Dr. German and Dr. Brady on this red line that Ollie has done. And I agree. It's a little difficult because there's so many different documents here with so many different good points, you know, Dr. Snell's and Dr. German's and Ollie's and what have you. It's hard to follow. You have to read each document to find where the changes are. And previously I had asked, is there a way for us, I don't know, Dr. Beanstalk and Dr. Lout had a lot of stuff in there about the pediatric designation, to get one clean document, but each individual's input is a different color. I don't know if that's possible, Ryan, and I think it would certainly make it easier to follow this and understand where the changes are, you know, what are overriding. I know some things we already all have agreed upon kind of verbally that we think this is a great idea, let's go with that. I'm not sure if we really voted on it or not, or if it has to be voted, but a clean document where Dr. Snell's comments are in blue, Dr. German's comments are in green, Dr. Lout and Dr. Beanstalk's comments are, you know, magenta. I don't know. Is that a possibility?
So, this is Ali. It's here. So the only rule changes that we approved so far were the ones regarding the P designation, and then the changes to the 1304 that I had submitted back in September. So it starts. So they did do a document where the P designation is in like a light blue, and mine is in red. Starts on page. It starts on page 8. So that one does have the ones that, if you scroll down through that, you'll see some things in blue. Those are regarding the P designation, and then you'll see things in red that are more related to the 1304.
This is German. There are several things in Ali's comments or red lines that I think are worth discussing, and maybe if the committee can vote on some of those changes, we can make some progress from that standpoint. I know Ali's put a lot of work into it. I don't know if that's something we can do today since we're discussing it already.
The one thing with mine is some of it will change what was in previously, but, you know, if it would make sense to go through the changes, try and do it as briefly as possible. So that
I think, Ollie, I think like what Dr. German is saying, and I agree, I've read this and I really like it. But I really do think maybe we go through this line by line. Dr. Hero, I would defer to what your comments are, but it really would spell it out for everybody. And areas that are redundant, you can just say, you know, this is just like it's always been or whatever, you know. We can highlight the specifics about the 1305 and how that changes things, and about, you know, we talked about requirements for people to check that so-and-so, that someone does have a 1305, and that the 1305 permit holder has to check to make sure the 1304 is valid. We can talk about the provisional process. All those things are, I think, are relative, and to go through it and make some votes and make some progress, like you said, Dr. German.
This is Harry. I think it's a good idea. Dr. Brady?
Dr. Brady here. I just had a couple of questions. Sorry, this is maybe questions because I'm late. One, do we have a quorum to establish today? Do we have enough people to make voting a motion?
You wouldn't even be able to meet if you didn't have a quorum.
Okay.
So you have a quorum of, so it's make up of virtual and the five that are present. So they think there's only three missing, so there's eight.
Okay.
And if I can, Dr. Hurd, interrupt real quick, Jessica Thomas, who you're familiar with as a board member, she's also present. I don't know, Jessica, if you want to interrupt yourself, but she's present as the board's rules administrator to help. And so we've never gotten to a point where we've had like language where it's written like what Dr. Plazek was saying, where this is commons, and then we can try to incorporate, and then
add in what we like, add in, take out what we don't, or what the consensus, and I'm adding myself now as a committee member. I do that as a board member a lot too. But Jessica, that's kind of her role, and she's a godsend. There's no way I could do this without her. So Jessica, I just introduced you, but thank you for being here.
Sure. Just let me know how I can help.
Yeah, you just rewrote those rules. My only comment on this would be, I think we need to allow the ability for Dr. Bienstock and Dr. Lout to provide input after voting if they want to implement anything, since they're both our pediatric representatives.
Then should we not vote?
Yeah, Dr. Brady, that's my right. point. Yeah. We may want to like get through a lot of this, right. not to stall
it. Informally approve it,
right. but just maybe
yeah.
see what our general consensus are, things are really directionally wrong, and then we can kind of formalize it with
yeah.
with more bodies and eyes.
If you guys want, we could go through and discuss it. I can make notes and I can change it. And then what I could do, to Dr. Blazek's point, I could add in the P designation changes that we put in there in a different color, so that there'll be a proposal, but based on some things that have already been approved in the document. It might make it, you know, a little cleaner to read for our next meeting.
Ollie, I wouldn't. So one of the things that I thought Dr. Lout and Dr. Bienstock were doing with the P designation, as opposed to what you had originally done, is they were focusing on oral and conscious sedation as opposed to deep in general. When we talked about it with them, I thought that deep in general for the dental anesthesiologist or the OMFS or CRNA or MDA would be waived at that time. Now we can go back and address it, but.
Yeah, I think you have that right. I think their P designation was all in regards to 1303.
Why don't we go through, you know, you kind of summarize point by point.
Sure.
We can informally approve it and then revisit it when we have Dr. Lout and Bienstock available.
Okay.
I just have two questions at Snell. One, because of the moratorium thing that threw us off last time, we're free to discuss anything, not just the 1304?
We're exempt. We got an exemption.
For everything. Like last time they said
all anesthesia rule changes. Yeah. Is that right, Ryan?
Yeah. Jessica can probably address this better, but we sent this to the governor's office for an exemption from the rule moratorium, and it was anything that was related to anesthesia. And I think it stemmed because of the bill that was at the legislation, they wanted to try to get something going. So I'm correct in that, right, Jessica?
I believe so. I think we had talked about that a little bit the last meeting. We had gone over the actual language of the exemption request, which included kind of a broader sentence at the end of it, requesting, in addition to specific sedation changes, also any other changes necessary. And I think that would cover you guys, particularly in light of the legislation or threat of legislation, to move forward with any other changes to your rules relating to anesthesia and sedation.
Now, my second question is, so we're all on the same physical page. What page are you starting on?
The first red in my version is on 199.
199 of the PDF?
Yep. And so this part, this is just related to the fees, and I basically just came up with fees. I assume it's really up to the board to decide what they want the fees to be. I did lower the fee on the 1304 to $100, thinking that there's potential for an influx of dentists submitting requests for 1304, since the consensus last meeting was that every office that has an external anesthesia provider would need it. And I also put on the 1305 certificate a $100 fee. You know, maybe that one should be $300 like the other permits. I'm not sure. But so that, you know, that's just adding that language there. And, you know, like I said, I'm not fighting over the dollars on that. Let me find the next red here.
Any discussion on the fees?
I would say keep them all consistent, 1301, 2, 3, and 5, for those that are providing the anesthesia, and then you could change something for the four. I'd even take it less than 100. I don't even know that they're, well, I have issues with that whole concept anyway, so I'm probably not the right one to.
Well, I know, it's kind of curious. I mean, where do the fees go? Is it to cover staff? I'm kind of curious about that. What's the idea behind these fees?
The board likes to have happy hours once a month. The fun for that.
Joking. Let's go in there. No, everything.
Yeah.
Ryan, do you want to answer that?
I can.
About Christina, where the fees go?
The fees actually go into the licensing account, the dental board's big fund account. That's part of our revenue. That's what actually keeps the agency going. We actually reduced the renewal fees for this upcoming year. So we've already reduced fees, and we did a cost analysis of that. So if you wanted to reduce fees now, I would ask if we can go back and do another analysis of this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of put numbers in there. I definitely thought reducing the 1304 would be helpful, especially since we're not talking on-site evaluation. It really would be getting the application, verifying that the documents are accurate, and we'll get to that later in here, but, and then issuing a permit. So I don't know if it would still have to be 300, but that's up to the board to decide. I mean, that's.
But the fees actually help our agency operate. So we rely solely on all licensing fees, whether that be a new application, renewal fees, or permits as well. So we don't receive money from the general fund.
Okay.
I'll tell you the truth. The reason why maybe the fees stay the same is because when we look at the current process, which is the 1304 must have an evaluation. Even the evaluation doesn't really cost the board any money. That's guys like me or someone else going to an office and doing the review. So when we look at it from an infrastructure point, maybe we got to keep it there. I agree. We're only taking paperwork and moving it around, and the staff is verifying that certain individuals have proper certification and all. So maybe we keep it the same, and that way we make sure that our board is well funded. There's nothing wrong with that concept.
The other thing with reducing the fees was kind of soften the blow of it for these dentists that are currently using a dentist anesthesiologist and don't have to have a permit. So anyways,
this is Harold. See, I agree with that last point. I think there's going to be a number of dentists that have not had to have a permit in the past that now are going to, and I'd like to see that process as smooth and as inexpensive as possible for particularly those offices. So I personally like having seen that 1304 permit fee be lower for the reason you just.
And let's not forget, this is going to generate additional revenue for the board, because there's always going to be a bunch more people getting a 1304. There's going to be a bunch of people getting a 1305 certificate. It will generate more revenue for the board. But I understand that revenue is not without board work.
This is Brady, and again, this is part of me being a delinquent contributor and now voicing an opinion, because the last board meeting I just made it right at the very tail end. Conceptually, it's really difficult for me to quite understand why we are now forcing a lot of providers to have a permit when they've been working with dentist, anesthesiologist, physician, or oral surgeons, an already permitted provider. Now you're asking them to duplicate another permit on top of that. So I don't quite understand the intent behind that. And then it also raises question, if all of the offices that we have to go to now also have to be a permanent dentist, then the 1301 mobile permit and that evaluation, is that also getting restructured completely to where a oral surgeon or a dentist who is under the umbrella of the dental board and did dentistry and anesthesia has to go and prove themselves with an evaluation? Is all of that getting thrown out as well?
Dr. Brady, with respect, can we postpone that discussion until we get to that part? I mean,
sure.
I would say talk about, you know, try to stay in some semblance of order here, but that will come up, I'm sure of it. I'm sorry to interrupt like that.
No worries. I realize I'm getting the car in front of the horse. It was just more so that, you know, there was already comments about now everyone has to have a 1304, and that's a general consensus. I don't know if that was really truly a general consensus. That's okay. The point of order that I'm calling out.
The next red is on page 205. The top of page 205, this is just adding a layer for when somebody has a mobile permit that they're going to verify that the office that they're going to has an appropriate permit. And this change is consistent in 1301, 1302, and 1303. And it's also in 1305. The next section, previously this was the section referencing working with a physician anesthesiologist with CRNA. There's a 1301 that you could do it. This is just now changed to reference the appropriate section in 1304 that we'll get to in a little bit.
Just to back up, under E, there were changes on your 1304 and 1305 that I think we should make consistent for 01 and 02, where it said type of catheter or portal with gauge, that E5, you had inserted type of IV catheter.
Right.
Just to keep it consistent.
I agree. Yep.
Ryan, I think we make a note to this. So that
is that on the E5 on 205? That was going to be my question.
Yeah.
You want to keep it as it's in 205, not as LE proposed?
No, I would move to that. What all E proposed.
Yeah, we had that
back in.
That's further. Is that
under the 1304 and 5 amended changes all E submitted, their corresponding session that lists the.
Under section E.
Yeah. So what you see on page 205 under letter E is consistent in 1302 permits and then the amended proposed changes by Ali, but in his amended changes where it says type of catheter or portal with gauge, he inserted type of IV catheter, just to be clear, just to specify that. But we did not update it in the 1301 or 1302, so it should be consistent.
Yep. Agreed. Yeah. It was just a little red on 206. It's just a change because the 1305 became something different. So you'll see that in multiple places where 1305 became 1306, 1306 became 1307.
This is Brady. Sorry. Just because we're going ahead. For D5C, the red line is that the dentist performing the procedure at the dental office or dental clinic holds a valid section 1301 permit or whatever those permits. If the intent is that everyone has to have even dual permits at this point, multiple permits, that language is a little bit concerning to me because general anesthesia is considered a procedure of dentistry under CPT codes for the ADA. So you can't have language if you're specifying that the dentist, because it is a dentist anesthesiologist or an oral surgeon performing the procedure, which general anesthesia is a procedure under CPT codes. So the language would have to be massaged if that's the intent. That's all that I'm saying at this point. But we'll circle back if that's the case.
Okay.
And you, Dr. Brady, you're talking about the red letter C, you said?
The letter C, correct.
Yeah, I had the same issue. I had the same issue. I would agree. It was a little confusing. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and we can get into the discussion that was had last meeting, which just to put it out there, it wasn't my idea. but this is just to add an extra layer of verification so that if you have a mobile permit that you are doing your due diligence to verify that the office has a permit. And we can, you know, that's all this is to say that if you use your mobile permit that you're going to check and make sure the other office. I guess we should just have the discussion now. The discussion revolves around, one, and most importantly, safety. And the other one being the dental board knowing where anesthesia is being administered and leveling the playing field. I think those were all kind of the main points. So the safety aspect is that, you know, to get a 1304 permit, there's actually a a small amount of training that the dentist has to have. They have to have ACLS, they have done an airway course, that sort of thing. So it's just to assure that when a dentist brings in an outside anesthesia provider, no matter what kind of outside anesthesia provider it is, that dentist bringing them in has some sort of training to be able to handle an emergency situation. So provide assistance to that anesthesia provider that's there. So that was a big part of it. And then, handed to Dr. Hero, I think he spoke to it well.
There is a couple of hands up. I'll call on Jessica. You have something to say?
I do. This is actually, we've moved on since I raised my hand, but I just wanted to give you guys a heads up that when you look at changing fees, there's two things to take into consideration. The first being you typically need to get specific approval from the governor's office to do that, particularly if you are establishing a new fee. And then second, new fees require special approval from the governor's regulatory review council once you've gotten approval from the governor's office. I believe it can require a 2/3 vote of the council. And they are very particular about approving fees. So moving forward with that process, they are going to want to know those hard questions of why the fee is being set at that rate, how that compares to other agencies in Arizona versus other dental board agencies in other states, those sorts of analysis and hard questions. So I just wanted to give you guys a heads up.
Thank you, Jessica. Dr. Arnold, did you have your hand up?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I wanted to speak on the 1304 permit. I don't know if this is the appropriate time for that or not. It seemed as though Dr. Brady was beginning to speak on the 1304 permit, and then he was asked for the discussion to move on. So if this is the appropriate time, I'd like to speak. If not, then I'll wait.
Let's try to work through more of your changes and then come back. If I think we're going to end up spending most of the time talking about this. Dr. Arnold, just when we get to the 1304 section, if you want to put your hand back up just so that we don't miss you, we'll be sure to call on you.
Okay. And then I do have some other general comments. Just because everyone that is listening, and I see many of the providers in the state that are listening, none of us have these documents that are being spoken about, other than the people who are members of the board. And the things that we are discussing are intimately involved with how we all make a living. And I'm wondering if we can have access to these documents and be able to read them, understand them, and comment on them before broad sweeping changes are made to our profession.
Ryan, are you able to comment on that?
Yeah. So this is Ryan Edmondson, board staff. And so what happened is that the board had decided that there needed to be reform to the anesthesia and sedation rules within the dentistry profession. So they did a press release to find out if anybody was interested in sitting on a committee to come up with rules. That ultimately this committee was formed and they will make a recommendation to the board. And it's strictly just a recommendation. And so while we're not totally unwilling to share a document, there's no way for us to ever know as staff or even as a committee to know who we should be sharing these documents with. That being said, and this is where I may kind of defer to Jessica a little bit, there is an open comment period about rules that ultimately go before GIRC, and there we have to allow a period of, Jessica, I probably will just shut up before I sound like a total buffoon, but and I'll let you answer that. But there is a comment period that you would be able to address any concerns that you would have about the rulemaking changes that the board would adopt.
Okay. And that's after this meeting and before it's taken to the board, I understand?
Yeah, it'll be well after this. But it will not be before it goes to the board. The board is ultimately the one. They're the final adjudicator on everything. And so they would have to, these recommendations go to the board vote on it. And then there's an open comment period. And it's required by law that we allow people from whoever wants to make comments. And we have to post it as a meeting. And then you come before the board and make your case for why or why not something works or doesn't work.
Okay. Thank you.
So the next red you'll see is on page 209. It's in RF 11-1302I. Previously it said it referenced language in RF 11-1301, and now it just changes to reference language that's in 1304 and says that a 1302 permit holder may employ or work with an anesthesia or sedation provider that qualifies under, and then references that section and references the limitations based on the qualifications of who comes in.
I think Jessica raised her hand again.
It seems like it's back down.
Okay.
This is Jessica. I was just going to comment on the open comment period, but I'm totally fine if you guys are fine.
Okay, thank you, Jessica.
Thank you.
Sure. On page 212, you'll see red there under 1303H. This is language that basically does the same thing of what I just mentioned in 1302, referencing the appropriate section for the qualifications of the anesthesia or sedation provider. And has some additional red line to change physician anesthesiologist or CRNA to anesthesia or sedation provider. Now we're getting into 1304. So in the first section under A, there's a lot lined out. Changes the permit to employ or work with a physician anesthesiologist or certified registered nurse anesthetist to read permit to employ or work with an anesthesia or sedation provider. Says that a dentist may utilize an anesthesia or sedation provider, physician anesthesiologist, certified registered nurse anesthetist, dentist with a section 1301 mobile permit, a section 1302 mobile permit, or a section 1303 mobile permit. While the dentist provides treatment, this language is not changed. And then it goes to list the different providers, point one being the physician anesthesiologist or CRNA meets the requirements specified in Article 11, 1304, I'm sorry, 1304B5. And then list the 1301 mobile permit meets the requirements as specified in D5. And it just lists who they can use and their requirements, which are further down in the section. Again, a change from being physician anesthesiologist or CRNA to anesthesia or sedation provider. Moving into section B on 2, this just, again, changes physician anesthesiologist or CRNA to anesthesia or sedation provider. A6 had endotracheal spelled wrong, so it's not corrected.
Where's that at? I see it. Yep.
And then it also adds a requirement for entitled CO2, which is something that this committee agreed to at a previous meeting.
This is Snell. I don't know that we agreed to that. We talked about it.
We agreed to it by approving the language that I submitted that we approved in September.
For a 1304 permit holder.
Mm-hmm.
But now the 1304 permit holder is different than what it was when we agreed to it.
This is Brady, point of order. I don't think we've ever taken a motion or voted on anything.
No, we haven't.
General consent, so that's now common hold.
We took a motion and voted on both the things that have been adopted, both the P designation language and the language that we approved in September.
I don't know.
I think either way, it's all open right now for discussion. So, you know, whether or not, and we can always double check, but honestly, I don't think it matters if there was a motion with an approval on it or not. It's all open for discussion. We can make any changes and vote.
Yeah, I mean, I guess regarding NTLCD, the national standard of care for anything moderate, deep, or general anesthesia is that entitled CO2.
This is Snell. I disagree with that comment.
you can look.
This is Brady. My point is that it's just that I'm not making a judgment call on that at all. I'm just making a point of order when you're saying globally, like we've approved things. I think it's within our committee to understand that everything is back open with the governor giving us the authority to actually do what we're going to do now to look at things. And I think moving one puzzle piece kind of, whether we like it or not, shifts the whole picture, right? So that I think that we all need to really have a general consensus and good feeling about this, even though I'm on board with what we're talking about. I do think that we have to reach our community of interest, the people that impact us, that's beyond this circle, and really come to grips with this versus, you know, making assumptions. That's all.
So how would we like to change the entitled CO2 language? Because we discussed this about, it was probably a year ago.
I think there's two issues on that portion. To Dr. Snell's point, he didn't feel for a light sedation or a conscious sedation, entitled CO2 was needed. And he referenced at the time that it was difficult for him to utilize on his patients because they're moving around like that. Whereas what you're referring to is deep, which, you know, deep sedation or general anesthetic, we all admit you got to have entitled CO2. Unfortunately, it's under the 1304 permit, which kind of makes it a little confusing, because if someone with a 1304 hires Dr. Snell, Dr. Snell is like, well, I'm only doing light sedation, so why do I have to have an entitled capnography? That's the meat and potatoes of this problem. Whereas if you are getting a 1304, well, we don't know what kind of person you're bringing in, so we want you to understand that that's the expectation. That's what you and I want to say. That's where our committee hopefully can have some agreement in terms of entitled CO2 and where it's utilized appropriately.
So should we change it to say entitled CO2 when moderate, deep, or general anesthesia is administered?
This is German. I would say something to the point where ventilation monitoring is required. You can say if you want to add that language, at least for deep and general anesthesia, entitled CO2 is required. Something like that. So at least there's some monitor of ventilation that with all anesthetic.
This is Brady, that also follows the AAP guidelines.
Yeah.
Okay.
That sounds pretty good. Monitoring of ventilation is a real good one.
I think that's already there. Oh, yeah, that's good. This other one had some discussions about the storage of controlled substances and documentation. The DEA requires that Schedule 3 drugs be shipped to and administered at the facility where they're going to be administered. So that's why we put this in there. It's based on a discussion we had a while ago. This language was in what we discussed back in September. Dr. Brady made a suggestion of changing the language just to say, you know, per DEA guidelines, rather than making any sort of oversight by the board.
That is Brady. There's so many nuances to that. I know that's like a broad brush thinking approach that's probably 95% accurate, but there's many, many nuances to that, to their regulations, even geographically, regionally speaking. And I don't think that is in the board's thing to duplicate or have duplicity of regulations written in the regulations, that there's a governing body to enforce that already. I think we may want to keep that language a little more dynamic and descriptive.
Yeah, my thought is maybe to say maintain proper documentation of controlled substances per DEA regulation.
Sure. And is that,
and that's it.
Just for clarification, we're talking about the dentist that's not providing the anesthesia.
Correct.
So they're going to have to be. Can they even do that? Is that for DEA?
It's ordered under their DEA.
But then can they dispense what they don't know how to dispense?
Yes. So like at a medical facility, even an ambulatory surgery center, there's a medical director. And all drugs go under that medical director's DEA license.
Even though they're not dispensing them.
That medical director is not giving all the drugs.
Right.
So, yes.
There is, this is German. So there is, that's all the ordering goes through that DEA license, but the dispensation is just recorded under the physician or the provider's name.
So then how?
There's a record of who dispensed the medication and if there's wasting or whatever. Those records are maintained.
So the dentist that's providing the dental procedure receives all the drugs. They have their list of controlled substances, and then they say, Dr. Snell gave 5 of midazolam. Dr. Brady on this day gave 10 of midazolam, and they record that in that drug log?
Essentially, I mean, generally what happens is the person that administered it will write the name of the patient, the drug, the amount, the waste amount, and then two people have to sign to verify it. Two licensed providers have to sign to verify, which is generally the anesthesia provider and the dentist.
This is Dr. Brady. I will tell you there is a lot more language to it than just that. I'm not trying to quibble with this point. I just think that it's probably best to leave those type of regulations to the DEA.
Sure.
Especially if we're proposing that everyone in the state of Arizona that has been practicing with anesthesia providers to all of a sudden adhere to something, they should adhere to the DEA and reference the DEA.
Yep, I agree. But this is German. Ali's not introducing a new practice here, right?
No.
You go.
No, you were correct.
Not a new practice, but to a new individual that's providing that practice. Like the individuals, correct if I'm wrong, Jason, the people that you go to, the dentist that you provide anesthesia for, they don't have the drug log. You have the drug log that you're providing stuff for.
So that many different providers practice differently. That's completely correct. Some providers don't even utilize controlled substances
right.
when they're providing general anesthesia. I'm just saying that it seems to me that this can be really a conflated issue when it really shouldn't be. That's all my point is. It's like let the DEA enforce and regulate the DEA and let us make regulations that actually impact safety of that child or that patient or didn't mean to say child.
So would you recommend taking those out, or how would you?
I would recommend that.
Correct. Just striking them.
Just striking that.
C and D.
Correct. Or revising it to a sense that just says, hey, we're just reminding DEA you to follow the DEA.
When it comes to storage and tracking of
correct.
That's my thought with an opioid crisis that we at least reference that you need to follow the DEA.
That's fine. If we want to make it a point, I think that would be an appropriate way of doing that.
And that's consistent with the board's approach with everything so far. You know, we recommend you follow CDC guidelines.
Right.
So, Dr. Caputo, you got your hand up.
I do. Thank you, Anthony.
Sure.
You know, I don't know. I mean, it kind of is related, and I don't know if it's something that the group has discussed, but it seems to me that there's also a liability issue here. And I do think that if something like this was going to be in the rules, whatever the language is, I would assume that we have a responsibility to make sure the dentist understands everything related to this kind of responsibility. I mean, it's a little bit more than just logging in drugs. I mean, if there is a misuse issue, if there's drug missing, if they were to get audited and couldn't explain the logs, they're still going to be responsible. And if they're working with multiple providers, those providers are gone. And the DEA is not going to care about those other providers. They're going to be looking at that certificate holder. So I do think there's a larger issue here that I don't know if you've considered or not, but I think it puts a level of responsibility and potential liability on the dentist to be in a capacity where they're ordering drugs that, as you've recognized, they may never dispense or administer. They're looking to others to do it. Yet, if something were to happen from a diversion standpoint, it's going to be hugely problematic for them. And it seems to me we may be opening up another area of liability here that we've sort of touched on in other ways by how we're sort of re-looking at these permit classes, but just to stay on this particular issue, I just wonder if that's something that's been considered as well while I agree that you could put in there that you need to follow the CDC guidelines and people should know what that is, I think that's a lot to ask of a dentist who is not involved at all in the administration of drugs to say you need to follow DEA guidelines when they probably really don't understand what the totality of that means. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Budo. Dr. Arma, you got your hand up?
Yes, I'm sorry. It took me a moment to unmute. Yeah, I just wanted to briefly comment on the same issue. If you look at what that will do, you have many mobile providers in the state. I would guess 30 mobile providers. And your average mobile provider goes to at least 20 plus offices. And as far as the controlling of Schedule 2, opioid medication goes, if you have 20 providers that keep track of all of that, and each individual mobile provider tracks it for the patients that they see, that's fairly simple. But if we were to turn around and mandate that each office were to do that, that would be 30 plus for me, and 20 or 30 for each other mobile provider, and many, many offices that have multiple providers, you would all of a sudden have hundreds and hundreds of people trying to track all these opioids, and there would be thousands of staff members who had close access to all of these opioids. It would actually do the exact opposite of what we're trying to do with DEA regulations. We're trying to make sure that these medications are used properly and safely and don't end up in the wrong hands. And if we were to do what that language says, it would be an absolute disaster trying to keep track of that in hundreds of locations all over the place for multiple providers. Nor does the DEA require that. And I think Jason Brady is absolutely correct. We have an entire government agency that's dedicated to creating these laws, and we should defer to them. And there shouldn't be any language in the regulations of the board except to say that we should follow the DEA rules, because the DEA rules change constantly. So what is the Arizona State Board of Dental Examiners going to do every time the DEA changes their rules? Are they going to go back through the committee and have long discussions and constantly be behind the curve, or are they going to say follow the DEA rules?
Thank you, Dr.
This is German. Maybe I'm confused, but from what I understand, this mandate or this regulation only applies to those applying for a 1304 permit who want to receive mobile anesthetists in their office. Is that correct? And it's not requiring every dentist to hold and protect opioids or narcotics, correct?
It may only be those that order opioids, controlled substances, to their office.
Whether it's for themselves or for the mobile anesthetist, is that correct?
I'm trying to figure out what the alternative. It sounds like the alternative is that somebody's transporting control,
which you can't.
Exist, which is against DEA regulations.
Right. So I'm trying to figure out what the question is. What's different? Is that not what we're doing now? I mean, when someone receives you go to their office and you need narcotics. Do you not get them from that dentist who holds them? So you don't bring your own narcotics, do you?
So this is Brady. Like I said, there's different providers that do different things. So that provider may or may not even utilize narcotics. There's a whole group that I know that does not utilize controlled substances at all for that very reason. And I think it's incumbent on the provider who holds the DEA license to understand the limitations and the laws for the DEA license. I think to Arnell's point is that it may add confusion to the dentist that now is going to be one required to take on a 1304 permit and then also to log those drugs separately from the laws of the providers or whatever that confusion point may be, whether it's their assistant or whoever's applying the logs to those facility locations.
I guess, this is German, I guess I'm still confused. If the opioid is given to a patient, who had the DEA that ordered the opioid? It was the dentist at the facility.
It's the mobile. It's the mobile anesthesia provider.
So they're transporting their opioids.
I'm just curious. They have DEA license for that facility, for that location. So there is a case where there is an individual that, you have to have like maybe, if you go to 10 different places, you're going to have 10 different DEA licenses for all of those individual locations. That is one way of doing it. And I think a lot of other people that practice, they probably require the facility to have that DEA location or responsibility, which is fine. But either way, it's incumbent on the person with a DEA license to uphold the laws of the DEA. And it's also the DEA's jurisdiction to enforce the DEA laws and regulations. So that's my only point. And I think that if you're trying to duplicate just even common themes of the DEA within the 1304 permit, I think what Arnell's point is that it could cause this type of confusion. So I think you just be very broad brush. People have to understand, okay, I'm hiring this provider. What does the DEA say about that? So I'm going to hire Ali. I need to have Ali wants to use opioids. I need to make sure that I have stock of opioids at this place versus I'm hiring this other provider. He has a DEA in my facility, or I'm hiring this other provider that doesn't even use narcotics at all. So the only thing you can't really get away from is like some of these emergency drugs, like ephedrine or midazolam. So you're only talking about a really small subset that you may be requiring the 1304 to have regardless to manage those types of emergencies. I know that doesn't really answer your question.
No, that makes sense. So there's no mandate to get narcotics. I think a very broad statement, like Dr. Briggs suggests about the DEA, is very appropriate.
So do we have a resolution if we just change C to say maintains proper documentation of controlled substances per DEA regulations and strike the rest of it, including striking D?
Yeah, I would vote yes for that.
Yeah, I would agree with that also. Ms. Blazek.
Will that solve the concern?
Yeah. I think that's broad brush enough.
Okay. So now it's coming down in 1305.
Do we want to move on to 1305?
Sorry, 1304, section 5. So this is saying that the 1304 permit holder will attest that any anesthesia or sedation provider utilized meets one of the following professional categories and will maintain documentation of qualifications. So it goes through and lists qualifications of a physician anesthesiologist, of a CRNA, of a section 1301 mobile permit holder, 1302 mobile permit holder, or a 1303 mobile permit holder. Of note, under the physician anesthesiologist and under the CRNA, one of the lines is that they hold an active 1305 certificate.
Who's doing the attesting?
This is the 1304 permit holder. So this would be the dentist who's at the office.
Is there language in here that if you have another certificate, like if you have a 1302 permit, that you don't have to get the 1304 permit?
Yeah, so if you, in each of those sections, it says that you have a permit to employ. And then it references this section 5 is what the qualifications are in 1301, 1302, and 1303.
So this section is only for dentists that do not have another permit?
Correct. Yeah. So this section actually really applies for 1304 as well as 1303, 1302, 1301. I'll see if I can find that. There's something this under that I where it says 1302 permit holder may employ or work with. So it allows 1301, 1302,
1303. So if a pediatric dentist that has a 1303 permit wants to bring in anybody
that
they don't need an additional permit.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Any comments or discussion on this section?
This is Brady. Sorry, I just one quick thing, Ali. If you could, you know, going through this kind of great at a great pace. I don't want to slow down, but if you could just say, hey, I'm on page this 5A.
Oh, like sorry. Yeah.
Sometimes I'm getting lost.
So yeah, this is page 214 under 5.
Okay.
And so this is what lists out. You know, so you'll see that the 1304 permit holder is attesting that they will use an anesthesia provider from one of these professional categories.
This is Blazek. A couple of comments that I wanted to make was that, and we had talked about this, Ali, about the idea of the individual carrying a certain amount of malpractice insurance.
Oh, yeah.
That's never been a requirement of anything that we do, and I would move that we strike that. But I'm also, I know it's mostly the mobile permits as I read this, but currently, to have a 1301 permit, you do not have to have pediatric advanced life support. So I would request that we either table that item, which is item number 4 under A, and item number 6, excuse me, under B. And I think we don't currently require that under 1301.
I think, are you sure? Hold on.
I think I pulled up
language.
Maybe I'm looking at the wrong document.
Well, while he's doing that, this is German. Can I just make a comment on the malpractice insurance? I would think that as a dentist receiving a mobile anesthesia provider, they would want to know that that provider has malpractice. You know, isn't that a safety thing for the dentist to know that someone providing sedation in your office is covered?
I agree it would be good for them to know, but do you want to mandate it by this that it has to? I mean,
this is Brady. I think that you have to have some kind of confirmation with insurance. You know, the set limits, that's everyone's, how risk taker are you going to be, right? If you're going to only insure yourself to be penny wise and a pound foolish, and that's on you to be that type of high risk type of situation, or if you're risk averse on the opposite end, which I pretty much am at this point, 3 to 5 million and everything else. But I do think that, you know, it is very important that we do understand and realize, because our perception could be completely off, that we think that we are insured when, in fact, you're not insured in certain situations. I did point out something to Ali that I'll just keep between me and Ali that kind of highlights those types of scenarios. So I do think some check and balance between if we're going with this 1304 permit is somewhat applicable, because the dentist may not understand vicarious liability or what they're assuming their risk to be with a certain individual. And so I think it's important both directions. And I agree with Blazek about like putting a dollar amount. That's kind of what that agreed upon situation may be.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not beholden to that. The reason why I put that in there really was because there was a lot of discussion at the last meeting about these requirements reflecting what credentialing requirements are at a medical facility. And that is always a credentialing requirement, having med mal of 1 million, 3 million at minimum. That's the only reason it's there. We could take away the limits. We could take away the med mal completely.
I'd vote remove limits.
Remove limits and keep med mal?
Yeah, personally, I think, you know, we not only do we have an obligation to protect patients, but I think the dentists who will be receiving outside providers, and this is one, you know, this potentially is one hole in that Swiss cheese model that can kind of fall through, and all of a sudden you find out they don't have any insurance, and then you're
This is great. Absolutely.
So consensus is remove the limits but keep the med mal. Okay. To the other point about the PALS, that is currently in 1301. If you look in page 203, in 1301B5, that you have to provide confirmation completing coursework within the 2 years prior to submitting the permit application in one or more of the following. It says, PALS in a practice treating pediatric patients. I copied and pasted that language to the 1304 section. Going back to, it says under four current PALs in a practice treating pediatric patients. So it's the same exact language from 1301.
What page is yours on, Holly?
214.
So currently it says one or more. So ACLS or PALS or airway advanced airway course.
Right.
Is yours reading the same way?
Well, I guess it's not exactly the same, that sentence, but from my read of that, is it saying that if you treat pediatric patients that you need to have PALS?
No, right? It doesn't say that. It says one or more. That's what it says. Number five, provide confirmation of completing coursework within 2 years prior to submitting the permit application in one or more of the following: ACLS, PALS, or a recognized continuing education course in advanced airway management. That's what it says.
This is German. Can I just ask why not PALS? PALS and ACLS are actually very different. I'm just curious why.
Well, I agree, John, and I think that's the discussion that we can have. My point was that how we have this document written up, maybe we put that one as tabled, and let's talk about the PALS designation. Let's talk about the requirements, and I'm fine with going back to look at that. But I didn't want to make it, like, to me, let's say we passed it as is, every oral surgeon has to have PALS now, and I'll guarantee you, hardly any of them do. And that's because in the original documents, the way this document is currently, it does not designate a difference in treating pediatric patients.
And that's Go ahead.
Do you have a comment, Tab?
Yeah, it's more along the lines of that 1305 permit, or that new section 1305. That may be outside the board's jurisdiction. Is basically what you're doing is you're going to be regulating CRNAs and physicians who are outside the scope of the board.
Thank you, Seth. Dr. Caputo.
Thank you, Anthony. I was just going to reiterate the point about the ability to have the different options with regards to emergency training. And I realize I'm an outlier here, but after 25 years of practice and almost 50,000 patients treated across the age spectrum in an office-based setting, I never once have had to employ ACLS or PALS to resuscitate or rescue a patient. It's all about airway management. We miss that, and our colleagues that are not intimately aware of what we do in the dental office setting miss that. ACLS is nice, PALS is nice, but they're really not applicable to what we do. If you get to the level of needing PALS and ACLS in emergency response management, you've missed a lot of steps along the way. So we really should be pushing airway management training for all of our providers more than we do. The mere fact that it's there is good enough, but let's not get too crazy in the water here thinking that taking PALS or ACLS is some sort of miracle for us, because they're not that great. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Caputo.
I don't disagree with him.
I would add to that the case selection course.
I don't think we don't need to change anything with that with the oral surgeons, but I just think for this new language, it'd be good if someone treated kids as PALS. It's just kind of a...
I was going to say, I think the whole pediatric conversation we should table until we have our pediatric dentist here. There's going to be a lot of input there that's going to change inevitably what the recommendation is.
This is Snell. I have a question, Ellie. Tell me, when it's under 5D, Section 1301, or for any of these, maybe more for the 1301 mold permit and 1302 and 3. If you have, is this redundant for, if you already hold a 1303 mobile permit or 02 or 01 mobile permit, are these things, is this above and beyond what you should have already had that we need to list them again? Or can it just say, 1301 mobile permit holder can be a can go into the office.
Yeah, probably. We could probably just say, we could probably just have D, the first line, without the corresponding I, 2, 3. Yeah.
It just seems simplified. I mean, earlier in the document, I would assume that it's referenced somewhere what a 1301 mobile permit holder needs to have and to do mobile sedation, anesthesia.
No, you're absolutely right. It's redundant. That can be removed. So.
Hey, I don't know whoever did the document on the Zoom meeting is a good idea. Look, whoever's doing that is helpful.
So moving to page 215.6, this was something that was discussed at the last meeting that the dental office, the 1304 permit holder, would submit to the dental board who they're bringing in for anesthesia.
There was some discussion last time about having a leeway period, grace period. Was that for any new provider or just to establish the 1304 to begin with?
I think it was to have I think we talked about having a year time period before people would need to have the permit because of the folks that are using mobile providers right now without a permit, not having it be, access to care.
So after that, is notification just like Dr. Jones has Dr. Snow go in to provide anesthesia and then he wants to have Dr. Brady come in? Does he need to provide before Dr. Brady gets there? Is it just an email?
I would think it'd just be an email or a phone call, but I mean, it's what we put, and we can change it to whatever you guys want. We're just like that, notify the board in writing the names and credentials. So I think it would just be an email to
my board staff. My recommendation would be, if you have someone that's already been credentialed by the board, you're good to go.
Yeah. So as long as they have the certificate, then don't worry about it.
Yeah. The one of the purposes of this was that the board knows what offices are having anesthesia provided in them. They already know that if they have the 1304 permit. And then if the provider has already been permitted and approved by the board, why have to go through that again?
Yeah, it gets confusing.
Yeah, I think that could come out. Yeah, I only added that because that's what I thought.
We're striking six.
So strike six.
While you're doing that, this is Jeremy. Can I just maybe propose that maybe next meeting we dedicate 30 or 45 minutes to just pediatrics and we can talk about all that specific, so we can put that on the agenda for next.
I think as part of that, we should try to confirm if Dr. Phoenix can be able to attend.
Well, the next meeting is on a Friday, so I think that would that will benefit both of them.
Right.
Then I'll wait
until Tuesday. I mean, those that don't like the Friday. Just...
I think it's a good idea, John, Dr. German. I think just table it and all those things we're talking about and spend a good 45, 50 minutes on it for sure.
Let's create a specific agenda item for it.
Good idea.
This is Christensen. I agree. I think we ought to dedicate some time specifically to the pediatric section and be nice to have our pediatric dentist there when we do so.
So in this next piece on page 215 in section C, this is the part where, we're not having the on-site evaluation, that they'll send in the application, the board issues a permit. We spoke last meeting about being able to have an expedited permit. I put it in C1. I put it at 3 business days. I wanted to consult with board staff what would actually be reasonable. I might have been overly generous with 3 days.
Very generous.
So I don't know what would be appropriate. I mean, to be able to issue a temporary, would it be a temporary? Would it be a full permit?
Well, you have one staff member that processes all these permits. And we have rules that we have to follow already. So I don't know how that would fit into what we already have to follow when we receive an application, notifying the applicant that what their deficiencies are. So I don't know if that would have to be changed.
This is Dr. Snell. The part 4 of 1301, 2, and 3, there is a section that talks about the time frame for submitting those applications and getting back and having the. Is there any verbiage or any language for that submittal process?
Not for the.
So that would be something that we would have to wholly create new for this as well.
I think that definitely adds extra stress and requirements on staff for an expedited permit.
I was going to ask Dr. Brady, because I thought that was one area of the ASDA draft guidelines that you guys did a pretty nice job on, about the provisional permit and then the actual evaluation over time. Could you comment how you guys came up with your process or your guideline? Did you do a bunch of research throughout the other states, or what? How'd you get those date numbers?
Thank you. This is Brady. Thank you, Dr. Blasek. I think we have even more of an expert in that, because she's sitting in the audience, Cynthia Fukami, that may be able to comment on that question a little bit better than I would be able to.
Yeah, actually, I'm trying to recall exactly how that number was arrived at, but...
So give me just 1 second, because they're probably not going to be able to hear you from back there. So, okay, yeah. And then can you state your name for the record as well? I know Dr. Brady.
This is Brady. Sorry, Cynthia. Put you on the spot.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Cynthia Fukami. I'm attending in person, but I'm not on camera. I guess if I'm being asked to comment on the ASDA model legislation factor, the date for those temporary permits or provisional permits were determined in part by polling how long it took on average for a lot of folks to obtain those permits in other states. And there are actually other states that have language that resembles this one already. So I think in the model legislation specifically says 120 days to obtain the initial provisional permit, but you have a year to actually complete the process for finalizing permit completion.
Thanks, Dr. Fukami. So for clarification, what I thought was cool about the draft guidelines was the provisional aspect, but they were still requiring, you know, an evaluation, which we're kind of moving away from that aspect for the 1304, which I think we've all agreed upon. Certainly, 120 days, the staff would probably find that much more reasonable. 3 days is kind of tough, which is what they're telling us now. And does our staff currently have any ideas or comments about what our current process takes now? Is it taking 30 days for 1304? Or are they all like, you know, like Ali had said originally, he had a couple guys that took a year. So, you know, so something to make it a reasonable request.
Yeah, so you say it takes like 2 weeks, and then the delay is the inspection.
This is Sherry Diggs, board staff, Dr. Blasek. Once again, once we receive an application, we have 14 days, 10, I believe it's 10 days to notify them what is outstanding. And then once an application is complete, there's a time frame that we follow. But as Allie was saying, that a lot of the time it could be in a really remote location. It could be, and getting an evaluator out there to do an evaluation, that is sometimes where it takes an extended amount of time. The application can be complete, but it's getting somebody available to go out there and do an evaluation on that.
So, Ali, I'd like to maybe suggest we make it, say, 14 days for the provisional permit, because that way it gives staff time to do what they're already doing. That's how long it takes to process the paperwork, and I would think that that's a reasonable time frame.
I wish Susie was here so we could ask her.
Well, Susie did provide a spreadsheet in one of our meetings with the breakdown of the times, how long it took to issue a permit.
The times by definition are in this document already, if someone wants to go find them.
Yes, they are.
Like, it's established what they have, the time amount they have to get that back.
And once an application is complete, the timeline stops at our end.
Right.
And so, realistically, days-wise, it could go on for another 30, 45 days, depending on an evaluator's time schedule to get out there.
So you can, the dental office, if things are missing, yeah, there's a lot of
factors. There's many factors, but once it's complete, it's complete. It's just getting an evaluator available to their schedule to go out there and being able to do that evaluation for that applicant.
This is Brady. Just one comment on it too, just to keep in perspective. We have great many people in the community that are donating their time and efforts voluntarily, right, for that. So it hats off to you guys for coordinating all of that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tremendous task on your hands.
And I would say that's just for the small number of people that are providing the sedation anesthesia. We're opening this up to, as Dr. Arnell said, 20, 30 per provider now. That's a large volume of stuff coming
this
in.
This is Harold. I would guess it's not as big as that's being made out to be. I mean, most anesthesia providers, my assumption is they're going into offices that already have some type of permit. Pediatric office, there's going to be some level of sedation. But this isn't going to be every single dentist now has to get one of these permits. And these permits, we're talking about an advanced level course, ACLS, PALS, or airway, signing an affidavit. I mean, we can talk it into a bigger deal than it is. I don't think it's that much to make sure that a dentist that's going to be working on a sedated patient has some basic level of competency. And the adverse occurrence reports we've reviewed, I think, support that.
This is Brady. That's a valid point. I think there's some other concerns too. You know, we talk about being equitable and fair. If a new graduate is coming, obviously this isn't going to impact many of us that we're discussing, but right. If we're talking about new people coming into the state to provide services, I have to see how this lays out appropriately when we talk about fair and equitable choices that we're making, because if a dentist, a new pediatric dentist coming on board and say, hey, I need an anesthesia provider, and a new dentist anesthesiologist or oral surgeon or specialty, whatever, I'm not trying to pigeonhole it, right, but you get the concept. They're going for a 1301 plus mobile permit with evaluators and scheduling on top of that. But I get what you're saying. Right. Most of us, it's not going to be as impactful as we presume that it may be. However, there are some nuances in this that may have to carry over too.
Sure.
Because a 1302 permit holder employing a 1301 permit holder may not have that whole malpractice thing understood that we talked about, right, or that like credentialing process that we're kind of saying, hey, you got to have like a little bit of a relationship. Let's make sure that's established.
Right. This is not on topic, but I don't know if it's something that we should look at talking at one of the other meetings. Maybe these mobile permits aren't really going to be necessary at this point, though. If you're certified as a 1301 permit holder and you're going to be going into an office where that dentist now has a strict certificate, how important is it for the board to know that you're mobile or not? I mean, I'm kind of just posing a question I don't have any preconceived notion on, but it may be a topic for another day.
This is Brady. I think I'd have to like really dive into it, even make an opinion.
Right.
But it kind of goes back to Anthony's point about credentials as well and that whole evaluation.
Yeah, you and I talked about, you know, in a dentist anesthesiologist who's board certified and did a 3-year residency in anesthesia, you know, is it necessary for them to also have a 1301 mobile permit?
Right, Brady. But you have to realize, though, that the board itself requires a year of private practice before they can even set to become eligible to take the certifying exam. So there's a catch 22. They're not going to be able to get a permit if they're required to be board certified.
Right.
Could you board certified or board eligible?
Board certified, board eligible. Yeah.
Because everyone's
board eligible out of residency.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I mean, depending on facilities, there's physician anesthesiologists that are not required to be board certified to practice. So I'm just thinking about making it fair.
And this is Brady. This goes back to the point of that application with the Mississippi non-permitted provider that we're trying to look at. I think we all really need to scrutinize that, because it's trying to weed out those types of situations. They're,
at least the dentist has an understanding, hey, this is someone that does not have hospital privileges anymore. And this is someone that's never treated a pediatric child. Mm-hmm. You know, those are fair concerns, so.
Dr. Caputo, you get your hand up.
Thank you, Anthony. While I agree that there are nuances here, particularly with a dentist who looks to bring in a non-dentist anesthesia provider, and while I don't necessarily agree with this idea of permit separation, which I'll hopefully be able to comment on later, I will say with regards to this particular issue, one thing that stands clearly in the way of a 1301 permit holder, I don't know that...
Dr. Caputo, it's real choppy, the connection right now. Is there anything you can do on your end?
Yeah, let me try something.
How's that better?
Much better.
Okay. So where I was going with this is one thing that affects the 1301 permit holder that I'm not sure affects the 1302, it could affect the 1303, and that is not only are you impacted by the time frame of getting your permit, you also can't credential with insurance plans until that permit is in force. So everything is put on hold with an insurance plan until you have that permit, and that can delay your credentialing with that insurance for several months as well. So this is not a new concept, even though I understand, you know, we see it a little bit differently now, but this was actually brought up at the last anesthesia committee meeting. Unfortunately, the board at the time just sort of didn't have the interest in pursuing it. But one of the proposals was sort of what's been discussed now is provide a provisional period that a credentialed provider or a appropriately educated provider, and again, language would have to be worked on to this level, would have a provisional permit for a set period of time, be it 3 months, 6 months, some interval that allows them to start practice right away, knowing that at some point they'll have an evaluation completed, and that will go from a provisional permit to a permanent permit. So it is something that's been considered. And if this is something that this committee's interested in, I think it's fantastic. So I think when you're thinking about the efficiency or expediency of permitting, yes, there are different levels that we're discussing here, but we should consider it across permit levels. Thank you.
It's a good point. Andy, maybe the language that we're working in for temporary certification could be worked into some of these other permits. Maybe we can add that as an agenda item as well. I mean, I don't know that we need it as a separate item, but I think that I know for new graduates from specialty programs, that's a real stumbling block kind of across the board, right? And the language could be if you're graduating, if you've finished up a OMFS residency, a DA residency, a pediatric residency, the corresponding certificates could be granted temporarily and expeditedly prior to the evaluation.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, when you're looking at, you graduate, you're not all the student loans, then you can apply for your permit, you got to wait for 3 months. And then you finally get your permit, and now you can go for credentialing and wait another 3 months. And then you can finally start getting paid for services. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
This is Brady. I support that. I think that it's still good to have the evaluation type of patient. I may not agree with the live patient scenario. I think there's some ethical concerns that I definitely have, but more so of getting familiar with, I know it's not on us to teach people, as they have to do their own homework, but really familiarizing yourself too. I mean, if you're coming out of a hospital-based program and you're jumping into mobile program into a dental office, they're two different worlds completely. And so just maybe having the opportunity to even speak to an evaluator saying, hey, this is kind of how we want you to run your systems. This is how you check before your pre-flight, so to speak, before you start the day. This is that. What's your emergency protocols? What is your transfer protocols? What are those things so that they can articulate their point, right? There's no major red flags, even if you're not watching them try to start an IV with two evaluators looking over the shoulders or anything.
And I mean, it's right. What are we really about right. that in a point? Right. But
that might be a line item completely on itself.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I guess my question is, Dr. Brady had brought up some questions about the 1304. It sounded like someone there brought it up. When do we get to have that discussion of the validity of having this, or are we already past that discussion?
Well, I mean, I think it's just an ongoing conversation that we're having, and maybe that's another agenda item at some point. I don't think that has to be separate, but
I think Arnell was he sounded like he had some questions about comments about that, so I don't when right. Those comments come.
I think that now would probably be appropriate, Dr. Snell, and the idea here was, okay, are we going to make everybody retroactively get 1304s if they're already using someone with a mobile? And, this is probably the appropriate time to talk about it, I would say.
Let's get into it then right now, and then we're not going to make any other agenda items. Let's have this conversation wrap up and then, look forward to the next meeting. That sounds okay with everybody.
This is Brady. The one other thing, maybe, I know someone brought up the concern with the 1305. It would be nice to have some, and I don't know how you do that, to get some assurances in place.
Yeah, I don't either.
I mean, I don't know if there's an ability to talk with the nursing board or not. The physician board has never raised the flag that I've noticed in California, Mississippi, or any other place I've been involved with, but it is this notion of, regulating outside of the parameters, I think that is a valid concern. The person on the phone.
And that was past the board's attorney that brought it up.
Right. So it's very valid. I don't know. We can burn a lot of time.
Yeah.
I know from experience. But I don't know if there's any way to maybe staff attorney can set, if you don't mind looking into it. Is there any way to create a memorandum of understanding or something just to address the concern that still has not been answered even today? I'll stop picking on CRNA, but if a physician anesthesiologist came in and said, okay, well, man, there's an issue here and there's some culpability with anesthesia, and especially with the dentistry, it's like kind of this mixed ad hoc of complications, or, it's not just one issue, it's maybe 10 issues. And then, but wait a minute, he's practicing at this other office the next day. As it stands today, there's nothing to pump the brakes when they're practicing in the dental office, right? And in a hospital, dentistry is not going to say you can't stop a dentist. They're not going to say that. They're not going to have that. So I don't know if there's a way to have a memorandum of understanding.
I mean, I could send this. There's a CRNA on the board of nursing. I can share this with her and talk to her about it and ask her to present it. I don't know if they'll be able to put it on their agenda for the next meeting or not, but ask the board, and maybe we can get a,
Or if there's a way for the attorneys to talk to each other, so to speak. I guess I'm asking.
Are you raising your hand?
Yeah.
I thought you were scratching your head.
I started to do that. So a couple of concerns that I see is the current makeup of the nursing board may be okay with it, maybe not, but ultimately, what if the next makeup of the next nursing board isn't, do they start repealing things? I mean, that's the concern that you start getting into. But I think that what should happen is, if a dentist is calling in an outside profession, that it's still, the dentist is still one that drew the patient. They brought the patient in. It's up to them to make certain that whoever comes in has the proper education, certificate, license, whatever. So whether they bring a medical anesthesiologist or CRNA in, they're going to do that. Then the liability is still on the dentist to make certain. Because that's the only thing that this board regulates with dentists. We can't go into regulating CRNAs, medical anesthesiologists. And if they can't verify that, then they should probably refer the patient out and to somebody else that can do the anesthesia.
I think that's a really good point, because what you're really doing in this, you're creating a 1305 certificate. You're on the board, remember? You can tell the point yourself. You're creating the certificate, but really, so under the current system, right, a dentist who has a 1301 through 4 can bring in a physician or a CRNA to do anesthesia. right? So whose responsibility is it to make sure they have a permit? Because we've had situations where non-dentists have gone into offices and given anesthesia or sedation, and that office didn't have a permit, right? And as it is right now, that requirement is on solely on the shoulders of the dentist to verify. This still puts that responsibility on the dentist to verify, but they have an ability to verify very easily by checking on the dental board, is this person certified? You know, do they have a 1305 certificate? So in my mind, I don't see this as regulating non-dentists. I see this as providing a certificate, and then the dentist is bringing in that certificate holder. That's just one of the things, like ACL and PAL, Dr. Blazek, that they have to verify that they have before they come to the office. That's my take on it, and I will argue that position to the Board of Nurses.
And then along those lines, the Board of the Mississippi, they actually require that the dentist submit an application on behalf of the non-dentist provider. Right. Either way, the non-dentist provider is being introduced to the Board of Dentistry. Is that correct?
Correct.
And their credentials, basically.
And Ali, that's, you know, that was our discussion you and I had. I'm fully in support of the idea, and I appreciate the diligence you've already done with the CRNA board to kind of run this up the flagpole per se.
Thanks.
This is Dr. Snell. there was a comment made last meeting about the cases that we reviewed and how they lean towards somehow mobile being less safe. If someone would care to comment how that's the case, because as I review those cases, I see two of all of those that we reviewed that you might be able to pin on it being a mobile situation. So that's two out of
the million cases?
Yes, right. So when we say we're trying to do something that's going to be more safe for the patient, are we really?
How many mobile providers were involved in those cases?
There was 10. Now, I don't know mobile providers because it doesn't have them listed as mobile. I just know that there's 10 outside anesthesia providers. There were 3 MD anesthesiologists, 6 general anesthesiologists, and 1 oral maxillofacial surgeon.
So 6 dental, 3 MDs.
And 1 OMS, but I think the 1 OMS was in conjunction with, it was the 1
case. That's 9 mobile, yeah. Basically, right?
10.
10 mobile.
6, 3, and 1.
Involved.
As, there could be other mobiles, but those are outside. Like, if, for my, for example, if I were one of these cases, it'd be a 1302, but I'm a dentist and it doesn't regulate that because I'm not a, I'm a general dentist, so I wouldn't know that I was a mobile or not.
There's a brain, some of those things that were reported also, you're glad that they reported, you're glad that they transferred, and the case was managed appropriately, it was a successful arrest,
so I
never want to discourage either. So
yeah.
It is a lot of muddy water.
There's only, and that's why I said there's, and I've further broken down into kind of what Texas's Blue Ribbon panel did. Was it a major event, or was it a mishap? And someone handled the mishap appropriately. I don't know that we should punish, you know, say, oh, that was unsafe. It was a mishap. It was a tachycardia. It was a laryngeal spasm. So there were mishaps. But just that was in general in all the cases. But of those 10, there's only 2 that, in my opinion, you could even argue were because it was mobile related. The other 8 were just...
Does this fit on what we're talking? I mean,
To me, it's talked about, why are we having to do this new, everyone has a permit if you're having a mobile provider in your office, when Ali said it's, so the board knows where that's being done, so it's more safe for the patient, and there was one other reason.
Level playing field.
So the safety concern of that, I think, is invalid, in my opinion.
To me, this isn't a question of mobile or not. It's a question of the training of one of the practitioners working on the sedated patient. I'll speak just for myself. I don't think it has anything to do with, I don't think Dr. Brady's ability to sedate a patient changes if he's in one location all the time, or if he's traveling around. It may be influenced by the practitioner that's working with him, though. And what I saw out of those adverse occurrence reports was a lot of case selection issues. And if that could be somehow incorporated into the educational requirements of the practitioner that's applying for the 1304, that would help. That's a side issue, but that was part of what sparked it.
This is Brady. I think that honestly what it boils down to is not necessarily venue, it's that additional staff. And I think the intent of this is good in heart, right? It's like, hey, you are working with someone that has some type of permit or some type of ability to understand to some degree anesthesia or sedation. It does seem a little penalizing in some of these modalities of how we operate and work. At the same time, like it may be something that could be massaged out that as well. You know, and again, every provider does anesthesia so differently across the spectrum. It may be like, well, if you're working with a non-permanent dentist, you have to ensure that extra staff member, because I think that's really to the heart of what we're talking about, that extra staff member has that same knowledge and appreciation. I mean, when you work with residents, if I was to work with a resident in a non-permanent dentist office, that resident, not to bag on my 1302 colleagues, yeah, 1303 sure. colleagues, but they're very, very well trained.
Right.
They're very attuned to the situation. So it's a little bit of a dynamic. So I get what they're trying to capture. I don't know if there's a way to say that staff member. And I don't know. I haven't had enough time to really discover how that would look, other than model legislation has a little bit of that already built into it, but how that would fit with the discussion that we're talking about today. Because I kind of agree with what Dr. Snell was talking about. Like,
sure.
why are we trying to mitigate a situation that may be not a situation in Arizona?
Right.
So I think that was the intent of this drive. And if so, I think there's ways to maybe talk to happy meeting.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why we're talking.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm sorry, I'm not prepared to like tell you what that happened.
Yeah, no.
Well, I see a problem and I have no resolution.
That's right.
Dr. Blazek.
Well, my comment, I think, to Dr. Snell would be, if you're just pointing something out about the adverse occurrence research that we did, I would agree with you. But I still see that there is, it's incumbent upon us to tune up the 1304 permit and this idea that a CRNA or an MDA has an equal opportunity to go to a dental office. And hence, that's why we are doing these two things. So if your comment is merely that, hey, I don't really see an issue with the adverse occurrence report, I get it. But if your comment about that is to say, why are we making changes to the statutes, I think they're two different things.
Yeah, no, this is Dr. Snell. I totally agree, Dr. Blazek. I'm not... That's why I said the three purposes, the only one I'm commenting on is the safety one of those. I think there's a much better way, to be fair and equitable, than making it very, onerous on dentists to have anyone come into their office and provide anesthesia and sedation by doing ACLS, all this stuff that we're talking about in here. I'd be totally fine. Personally, if Ali went into any office that I went into, I would have him sedate me all day long. They've gone to school, they've got the education. It's not about that. It's just, I don't see, from the safety side of things, I don't think that's an issue. And we're talking about that as if it is an issue. And I just want to put on record that I don't believe that it is.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, Dr. Still. I'd be happy to give you an answer. and the feeling's mutual, by the way. but I guess to that, you know, what you're saying is that's a whole other way of you get rid of the 1304 permit altogether, and you just say CRNAs and physician anesthesiologists can go into any dental office and provide anesthesia as long as they protect the, you know, follow the standards of care. which was exactly what that legislation was. So,
from a legality standpoint and supervising that, I don't know how that works.
Right.
But from a practicality standpoint, yeah.
And the this
is Lazik. Doesn't the people on this committee think that the board has the right and actually the it's incumbent upon them to know where anesthesia is being provided in the dental office?
I think that's totally fine, and that could be done by anytime I go into a new office, I have to let the board know that I'm going there, which is what I believe I currently do.
This is Brady. It may be where I, not that I disagree with you, Blaise, but we do need to look into that a little bit deeper than that, because I know that there was this registry type of proposal in Texas, and the Texas board got sued and or something to that effect over that. I just want to see us go into a trap. Like, I just want to discover that a little bit more about that, because I do agree. Like, I think it is incumbent on the dental office, just as my same argument goes, is how do you stop this person that's unregulated, even though the dentist is all the responsibilities on dentist A. Does that really make a favorite dentist B if the board doesn't notify dentist B that, hey, just watch out for this guy, you know, in this situation? So I will try to do my homework on that and send that out. I just know some rumblings in the back of my mind that this happened maybe 5 years ago, something like this in Texas. It came up to be a big
registration.
Yeah, some type of registration.
I mean, I do think it's reasonable that the dental board knows where anesthesia is being administered in the state. I mean, I don't like overregulation, but it just seems reasonable for that. And for, you know, certain standards of safety to have some assurance that they're being followed.
But they should be being followed as the mobile provider that's saying, I agree to have all these things, when the board says, okay, they're assuming that that's being followed wherever and whatever dental office I'm going to.
I don't think this plays again. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn in that we talked earlier about why this committee was created, and there's bad apples out there everywhere. But one of the reasons this committee was created was that, if I'm not mistaken, I know the board gave a permit to somebody who was not credentialed. They shouldn't even have had a permit. And that was, you know, one of the three or four items that happened recently in this state that I understand is what drove this committee to be created in the first place. It was about how do we make this process be more reliable, that we are having properly trained anesthesia providers in the dental office. Because only less than a year ago, or two now, I guess, the board gave a permit to somebody who shouldn't have been doing anesthesia.
Well, I think that's 3 years ago.
I agree, but I don't think this is meeting that need. That's going back to what is the legal terms right now for getting permits. We're now adding permits to that. We're not even addressing that idea, in my opinion.
Yeah. I would disagree, because what we're actually asking now is someone who's an MDA or who's a CRNA, just like you do, Dr. Snell, you had to provide the board your credentials and say, I'm allowed to do this because of my training, just like I had to do, just like Dr. Caputo and Dr. Brady and Bronstein, everybody. Whereas prior to this document, that wasn't a requirement. The board had nothing in writing that said, no, if you're going to come into a dental office and provide anesthesia, you have to show us your credential.
This is Dr. Brady. I think you're correct, Blaisdell, in the fact that it's that credentialing process. But what we're talking about credentialing process is bringing on a non-dentist person that you're credentialing, right? Because credentialing process for me is that 1301 mobile permit that's already in place. So the 1304 is that credentialing type of process. And so I think to Snell's point is, well, I'm already credentialed. So that's, and I know in a perfect world, we're all completely equitable. I don't know, you know, finding that happy medium, I think to make these permits available for our non-business colleagues to be able to practice. And to also, I mean, it's not a bad idea that every dentist, even if they're working with another dentist, has that understanding about coverage, vicarious liability, what they're signing up for. There's some details to tease out with that, because that is intermixed with the 1304, which I do support dentist to dentist or dentist to non-dentist on.
Dr. Arnall, you got your hand up?
Yes, I've heard several times people say one of the three reasons for this is leveling the playing field. For people who weren't in the original discussions, I'm not sure what you mean by that. What playing field are we leveling?
Ollie, why don't you take that one?
So in North Carolina, there's a Supreme Court decision that the dental board was creating an anti-competitive marketplace by giving preference to one type of profession over another, which created a lot of problems.
I assume you mean CRNAs and physician anesthesiologists versus dentist anesthesiologists.
No, this one actually had to do with teeth whitening.
Yeah, so the anti-competitiveness had nothing to do. Actually, that was part of the legislation that I wasn't a super fan of, but Jesse Arment argument.
That's a fair point.
So the level, this is Ryan Bordstadt. So level the playing field is to allow non-dentists to come into a dentist's office to provide anesthesia. The anti-competitiveness was the dental board in North Carolina told teeth whiteners that they couldn't provide teeth whitening. So they were trying to regulate something that wasn't regulatable, and they lost in a U.S. Supreme Court. So
if I'm understanding what's being said, leveling the playing field is that one of the goals is to make the playing field the same for nurse anesthetists as for dentist anesthesiologists and oral surgeons and so on and so on.
Correct.
So let me ask a question then. If I were to go to the hospital and say, you know what, I was trained in a hospital to do general surgical procedures, you know, provide anesthesia for that, I'd really like to practice here. What would they say to me?
Right. We talked about that at the last meeting.
And if I was to go to the nursing board and say, you know, I'd really like to sit on your anesthesia committee as a dentist, what would they say to me?
We can't speak to that because it's outside of our jurisdiction. I can tell you that boils down to local control.
I believe it's a little disingenuous to say that we need to level the playing field in a playing field where dentists are absolutely not allowed. And I mean no disrespect to any provider in particular, but to say that we need to make it absolutely equal for someone to come into a dental office who cannot be regulated by the dental board and in a setting where the nursing board or the medical board has no jurisdiction, and for a provider who offers no additional access to care because they can only do fee-for-service procedures, they can't bill access codes with dental codes, to say that we must make the playing field level, I think is disingenuous, because obviously the community of medical anesthesiologists and the community of nurse anesthetists has no intention whatsoever of doing the same for us. And I know what I'm saying may be offensive to some, but I also know that what I'm saying is a feeling that is felt across this entire state. And I've heard this from many, many providers that it's offensive that someone should say, you know what, I should be allowed to come into the dental office and provide anesthesia anywhere I like without anyone to govern me. It's absolutely offensive that all the dentists that are listening to this right now, if you do a filling, you have oversight. If you put on fluoride, you have oversight. If you provide anesthesia, you have oversight. And
it is disingenuous to say we must level the playing field when there actually is no playing field the other direction.
Okay, Dr. Arnold, I want to interject. Thank you for your comments. Appreciate them. Let's kind of bring this back in. What, other than the permits, particularly the 1304 permit, what other areas of the rules do we still need to amend and submit to the board? Have we, I mean, because at one point there was definitions, there was...
Yeah, this is Snell. I think we talked about briefly about definitions. I don't know if we've reviewed all those. The other thing that started all this, which Dr. Blaley brought up, was the application process is very cumbersome. The going in and doing a live demonstration, and there's no continuity between examiners doing that. Some people say you need this. So that whole process, I think, was something that we haven't even ever touched on that was the foundation of why this.
The evaluation process.
Yeah, the evaluation and just the application process in general, that whole process to get an application.
We were talking, yeah, this is Blazik. We were trying to narrow down the number of days that it should take for a provisional application to be accepted. That's how it started.
Brady, there's been a lot of time for just a few little
days. All right, let's start wrapping this up. How do you guys want to move forward? I'll give some general comments. I think we need to continue to kind of divvy some things up behind the scenes. Ollie spent a lot of time working on this last go around. You know, it's too cumbersome of a process to try to have everybody that we have on this committee talk through all of it specifically line by line and really get anywhere. So, Dr. Brady, you want to take another look at this 1304 language and maybe work with Ali and see if there's a median you can come up with?
Sure, absolutely. I don't want to have that little subcommittee together.
Okay.
I'd probably pull in Blazik.
Great. Yeah,
my sidekick over here. I've been cheating on this computer all day long.
So, and if you want to look back at definitions,
sure.
Okay. And then, so let's try to focus next time on hammering out everything that's not on the 1304 permit, just so we can at least try to wrap some of that up. Unless there's going to be, maybe that's flipped. Maybe we've got to hammer out the permit, and then just whatever we decide there might influence the rest of the rule areas.
Definitions shouldn't change.
Definitions.
But yeah. I do agree, Dr. Blazik. Would there be a way to...
Would it be like a Google Drive cloud document that everybody could access?
That would be nice.
And each set of specialties, general, peds, CRNA, MD, DA, and OMFS, can have a different color designated to them so that they can, I don't know if that's too cumbersome, but at least we know who's making what.
The only challenge will be is if people aren't familiar with Google Drive, with the capability of taking a, I don't even know what it's called, a sheet, right? Google Sheet, and writing, because they can write in their own color.
Yeah.
And once, because I won't assign colors because I don't want to offend anybody. You know what I mean? So, think about pink pie for Dr. Snow.
I'll take it. No offense taken.
Why don't we just focus on definitions and then the subcommittee's review of the 1304 if we need this 1305?
Would you like me to get together with Lau and Beanstalk and just start working on a pediatric?
That'd be great, Doctor. I appreciate it. Yeah.
I'll reach out to them.
I know I'm too.
You don't have to be
But may I be circled in with that?
Oh, definitely.
Conversation?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, of course. Dr. Caputo.
Thank you, Anthony. As we're kind of wrapping things up here for today, I know it's been a lot of discussion. I just would like to share some thoughts about this permitting process. And one of the things I'd like committee members to consider as they're going to do their work moving forward is, I think, a very relevant point that was made when we had a discussion with state legislatures regarding the bill that was being proposed at the time. I think it was 1372. But one of the things that was commented on that really resonated with me was this idea that our rules mention provider types by name. And we really don't have a reason for doing that. And much of why we don't is what we've been discussing today. We don't have regulatory authority over those other types of providers. So I really would encourage the committee members to consider language moving forward that does not include in any way, shape, or form any non-dentist provider. I think at the end of the day, we're permitting dentists. We are the State Board of Dental Examiners, and our responsibility are to those patients who are being impacted by those providers types who are lab technicians, hygienists, and dentists. And in this particular case, we're talking about dentists. And I think we should quite simply keep the process very easy. And that is, if you're going to be administering any level of sedation or anesthesia, notwithstanding our definitions for minimal, which I don't have any issue with, you need to have a permit. You need a permitted dentist present when that process is occurring. Period. How you get there, I'll let the board figure that out, but it shouldn't matter whether a dentist is going to bring in a dentist anesthesiologist, whether they're going to bring in a CRNA or whoever they decide they might want to bring in, particularly a provider type that's not regulated by this board. And I really think that that keeps the process simple. I think to create a bunch of different other layers is going to muddy the water. And I think we saw that just through many of our discussions today. So I think the emphasis on keep it simple. Let's stick to protecting patients in the dental office being treated by dentists who are directly regulated by this board. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Okay. Do we need to mention the other agenda items for the sake of?
No, you're just a journalist.
Okay.
Just a little hint.
Any other comments by board members? Committee members?
My only other comment is just, I don't see why dentist anesthesiologists cannot get credentialed to the hospital. In my opinion, they should be able to. So, just to be clear on that.
Thank you. My hope as this comes in front of the board, I do not want to see overregulation by any means. And as we talked about an additional, permitting of the other dentists that are working on sedated patients, that's not the goal. To reiterate what Caputo said, Mike has meant exactly, let's try to keep it simple and hammer something out that works for everybody. That'll meet the goals we've set forth. So that's that. Can I get a motion for adjournment?
I move to adjourn. This is no.
Third. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed.
Thanks, everybody. We should do it again soon.
Thank you, remote people.
Remote people. Remote people.
You can come to these expecting to be more.